Coming up on this episode of Inside Pop.
I am still basking in the afterglow of the experience of seeing Janet Jackson's State of the World Tour at Barclays in Brooklyn.
Also in this episode, we revisit one of our favorite lists, our top female friendships in pop culture, and discuss how their fictional relationships inspired us.
All of that, and of course, the big sell, it's right now on Inside Pop.
Hello, I'm Amita Patel.
And I'm Sean David Johnson, and this is Inside Pop. We are your weekly dive inside the world of pop culture. Amita Patel and Sean David Johnson attended the Janet Jackson concert at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn recently. Amita Patel, shall we begin our conversation about this concert with three words to describe the experience?
These are not my three words, but Sean David Johnson, yes. We're all very formal today with our names. Three words to describe my Janet experience: amazing, inspiring, and it's like a hyphenated word, once in a lifetime. Sorry, I have to give that.
Great. I love it. I love all three of those words slash phrases. You know, yeah, I was thinking that I obviously am a child of the 80s, and there's a lot of music and musicians from the 80s I love. Sadly, some of my favorite musicians have retired, like R.E.M. Some of my favorite musicians have sadly passed away, like Prince and Michael Jackson, most notably. And some of them just take very, very, very long hiatuses, like Annie Lennox, my favorite singer of all time. She is now coming out with an album once every 8 years, which is a painfully long wait for me. But it dawned on me last night while dancing original choreography along with Janet and her dancers out of my seat that Janet Jackson is one of my favorite artists from the 80s who is continuing to do it and kill it. And I am so grateful for that.
I echo all that gratefulness. Like, kill it is not even enough to describe how I lost it. Like, I lost it seeing her just come out on stage. Guys, I will admit, I teared up a couple times. Her coming out on stage, just that moment alone, because it was like this childhood dream of mine to finally see her live. And yes, it took 30 years, but I feel like I picked the best concert to go to. So many hits. So much great music. And more than anything, I think what's more inspiring is her work ethic. You could see it there on the stage. Like, she's better than all the dancers. She's hitting every move. And she's just an incredible performer, which I knew. We all knew. It's Janet Jackson. But for me to be there live and to experience it is a whole other level. So I cried when she came out. I cried during Together Again because it made me think of some lost loved ones. And I didn't think I was going to feel that last night because I was on such a high, and I did. And then later on, I cried again. And I was like, I don't do this. I've seen a lot of people I love. I don't cry. But that's how much she meant to me, and that's how much last night meant to me.
Yeah, it means a lot when there's someone you've loved for 10, 20, 30 years, for me, 40 years. You've got a lot invested in them. We've never met her. We probably never will meet her. She doesn't know us. We don't really know her. We know the image that she's projected for years. But still, there's that emotional investment, which it's just special and it's powerful. I didn't tear up. I was just a bubble of jubilant, ecstatic, pop, obsessive happiness. It really was. I don't think I've danced so much and so unselfconsciously at a show ever.
People, if you ever get a chance, somehow find Sean David Johnson and see him dance unselfconsciously. It's a show on its own. And I wanted to watch that show, but you were to my left and I needed to keep eyes locked on Janet. And so I could not watch it all the time.
That's fine.
But it was there were songs that were like a little more mellow and he was dancing. Like, he's like, it was just a whole other like atmosphere that Sean was in at this concert, which I enjoyed immensely.
And I'll say that we are in league with some intense Janet fans, and actually they're not objective, but what they have said is that this is one of her best tours in over a decade, right? She hasn't been this on point in a tour maybe since the Velvet Rope tour. So, yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, she's got a 51, 52-year-old body that's in amazing shape. Right, she's not 25 or 30-year-old Janet anymore, but she has, especially bouncing back after pregnancy.
Oh, my God.
And when I say get in shape, I mean she's developed this or redeveloped the stamina to dance nonstop for 2 hours. So she's back in shape. She's moving. She's limber. And she's, listen, for me, the big joy about seeing Janet Jackson in a concert is she does, unlike Madonna, who kind of reinvents everything every time, she pays tribute to her original choreography from a lot of the videos.
Yes.
And just seeing 52-year-old Janet do the If breakdown or the Rhythm Nation choreography that you saw in the video 30 years ago is pretty exciting. And it's like one of the many treats she gives to her loyal fans.
Oh, yes, that was such a treat to see her do that. And I knew that she was doing that. Like, people had been posting videos of this tour, you know, over the last few weeks. So I knew some of this stuff was happening. But just to be there and to live it and be in the room where it happens. Oh, my gosh. I can't stop thinking it. I think we were in the car ride after and somebody said, I need the set list again to just, like, be able to know exactly everything that we witnessed and felt. And I think I need that as well so that I can just relive that night over and over again, because I felt like it was a Janet concert for me, because it was just like all of my favorite songs, but it's all of everybody's favorite songs.
Right,
and
right.
So, but it's really top three concerts of my life for sure.
Wow. Oh yeah. My gosh. That's big. That's huge, huge, huge.
That's huge. Yeah. And you know, I was thinking about, like, I posted something on my personal Instagram about it, and I was thinking about it. I was like, I've seen a lot of my divas in life, you know, and just a lot of great concerts. And I've seen Beyonce a few times. I've seen Madonna. I've seen Lady Gaga. I have not yet seen Mariah, but I would love to, but it's still like, this was another level. And she's the OG. She originated all of that. You know what I mean? Maybe not Madonna, but you know what I'm saying? Like, she originated some of the newer artists that I also love right now. And they look to her for inspiration. And I just was like, now I see what they saw. I see what inspired them.
The crowd was amazing. Everyone was really, I didn't see any casual fans. Like, there were a couple people I spotted and I was like, are you just here because you know the singles? But no, they were singing along to the deep cut she performed. So great crowd. Everyone was in a really good mood. Everyone was just completely enraptured by her, if enraptured's a word. And
yes.
And I think we are going to get a chance to relive it, Amita, because Netflix has been filming this tour for the past couple of weeks, maybe month. So we're not sure if it's going to be a documentary about the concert, how much concert footage will be in it. It might be something akin to a Truth or Dare, where you get some performances and then some behind-the-scenes stuff. We'll try to get more information as it comes out, but I will definitely watch this the day it's released, probably with all the people we know. I'll invite over to my house.
We're having a viewing party of that
whenever
it comes out.
Exactly.
Viewing party, TBD. Oh my gosh, to relive it again and to relive it with all of you guys again will be amazing. Oh, I can't wait to see what they do with it as well. I will say shout out to the people behind us, because a couple rows behind us, there were some really, really great fans. And I like slightly turned, because I couldn't really turn away from Janet, to just like acknowledge them, but I didn't really get there. And I just remembered their energy was incredible. Like, they were like our energy. Shout out to those fans.
Yeah, I couldn't acknowledge. I wanted to commune a little bit, but the only energy I had was for you. You know, our occasional
likewise.
Eye contact, little bump and grind together that we did. But it really had to be
you
about.
You hit me so many times in the beginning. You
I
just
know.
Like pushed my shoulder. He didn't
love
hit me.
Taps.
Love taps on the shoulder. And then I would do the same thing back with certain songs. Oh my God.
Love taps on point.
After the first 10 minutes, I was like, we're going to do this all night. Please stop.
I know. I'm like, wait, I don't want to manhandle Amita. I don't want to be too rough with her. So I love that you just made this bold announcement. You know, I love your bold announcements. Top three concerts. Yeah. I'd love to hear from our listeners. I mean, you've heard us talk for the past 10 minutes or so about how much we loved Janet and the show. We'd love to hear from you guys. Please tweet or leave comments about what some of your favorite concerts have been and why. We'd love to hear all about that. So tweet us at Pop Insiders and visit our website at InsidePopPodcast.com and let us know.
And we'll have more after this very short message.
Hey everyone, Freddie Wong,
Matt Arnold,
and Will Campos,
here to tell you about Story Break, a writer's room podcast where every week we, the Hollywood geniuses behind Video Game High School, have 1 hour to turn a humble idea into an awesome movie.
Thrill as we weave the tragic tale of Jar Jar, a Star Wars story.
We're going to double down on everything that made the prequels great. Jar Jar, Trade Federation, politics.
Gasp as we assemble a pantheon of heroes for the Kellogg Cinematic Universe.
We could get rid of Snap, Crackle, Pop. I wouldn't even miss them.
You're crazy.
They die in the second act.
Oh, come on.
And join us as we make fun of Matt as he struggles to name a single Beyonce song.
Well, yeah, put a finger on it. Sure, she wants to be Beyonce.
Put a finger on it. Beyonce's famous song.
Will we break the story?
Or will the story break us?
Find out by joining us in the writer's room every Thursday on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Inside Pop. I'm Sean David Johnson.
And I'm Amita Patel. While you're traveling to visit friends or family this Thanksgiving, we thought it'd be appropriate to share one of our favorite lists dedicated to our top female friendships in pop culture. The bonds between these women will make you get all the feels. And of course, you're going to just want to hug or call your best friend immediately.
We all know that there's the negative stereotype that women actually can't be good friends with each other, that women can't work together, that they backstab, and mm-hmm. that there's this inherent competition, which is honestly, you know, an ugly stereotype, an ugly belief. And even if you do experience that on individual levels, you know, you definitely want to evolve past that. And I think, I don't know, pop culture can be a little, like, little goalpost, right? Like, oh, I see that friendship. That's the kind of friendship I aspire to. And yeah. That's that quite, that, I think that a lot of the choices I made are that for me, I think just friendship goals.
Yes. Squad goals.
Squad goals.
Yeah. I mean, and friendships can just not be two people like Laverne and Shirley or Thelma and Louise. You know, they can be groups of women like girlfriends, which I thought was such an incredible series. If anybody's ever watched Girlfriends on BET, it was really great. So let's get into it. I don't know.
Well,
so many.
One patriarchal phrase, which I will embrace, ladies first. Amita, why don't you begin? I want to hear your third favorite female friendship in pop culture.
I have a whole list here, guys. It's so hard to pick out which one's the third one because they all have like importance in some ways. And if we're only talking about characters, we're not talking about real women. Gail and Oprah are off my list, even though they're one of my favorite female friendships. So I think my first one is going to be the Golden Girls.
Thank you for being a friend.
Travel down the road and back again.
Now, why the Golden Girls?
I loved this show growing up. I thought it was such a funny show. And, you know, Sophia and Rose and Dorothy and Blanche, they just had such an incredible friendship and connection to each other. But more than that, you know, you didn't see it that often, like just these women sharing their experiences. Blanche was always, you know, having lovers left and right. And Sophia had her opinions all the time. And it was just an incredible celebration of these women who are of, an older age, but still realizing the strength of their relationship, which always brought them together. You know, it wasn't about the men and their relationships at all. Like, it was truly about them.
I love that choice. I love the fact that, right, they were also older. They were senior citizens, but they were allowed to be sexual and they were allowed to be flawed and they were allowed to learn and continue to grow even at their age. And it was such a whip smart show. I mean, all of the jokes, the one-liners, and how each of those characters became such archetypes. I love Golden Girls. Love that choice.
Thank you. And I think Golden Girls was top of mind because they just opened up this cafe in New York called Rue La Rue. Have you ever heard of it?
Oh, no, I saw a news report on it.
Yeah. It's true. Getting a lot of hype right now. It's Rue La Rue, and it's dedicated to Rue McClanahan, who was Blanche. And it's seriously, like, I haven't been, but I've seen some pieces about it. And it's like almost like a shrine to Rue McClanahan. And it has photos of her everywhere. Her Emmy is there in some corner. I really can't wait to go. But that's how iconic these actresses and these characters were. You know, like there's something about, we could go into a much bigger discussion about how 80s culture, there's something about 80s culture that was lasting, you know, and this is a very great example of that as a female friendship show.
Love it. They definitely set the standard. Love, 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 love your choice.
Thanks. What is yours?
My third favorite. I'll just say this. All of mine are TV. That just happened. But I'm going to go chronologically. So my third favorite is actually maybe the first female friendship that hit me when I was a young little boy watching syndicated television. These two made me laugh out loud hysterically. I'm talking about Lucy and Ethel.
Yes!
Lucy Ricardo and Ethel Mertz.
Oh, I'm so glad you put this on here. We didn't know each other's lists. We had a debate about knowing each other's lists before this. Oh my God, I love Lucy and Ethel.
I love. Okay, and so this is, let's talk about their friendship. Lucy and all of her harebrained schemes. Ethel was ride or die. Ethel was always there. No matter, Ethel knew Lucy should not be trying to get into the club one more time. Ethel knew that Lucy should not pursue a career in show business. Ethel knew that, but she was always there to support her friend, kind of to try to talk her down, to try to protect her, and also just to have fun with her. Because I think Ethel knew that, listen, I'm married to Fred Mertz. Yes, we own a building. We're landlords, but I'm married to Fred Mertz. I need some adventure in my life. Where do I get this adventure? My friend Lucy Ricardo.
Oh, they are the best. I loved watching reruns of that show. It gave me so much joy. I love that you chose these guys.
Yeah. I mean, it was called I Love Lucy, but it was really the story of Lucy and Ethel. You know, especially as a kid, you know, Fred, I was just like, Ethel, really? Fred? He seems really joyless and, you know, not the most attractive guy.
He's pretty rigid,
Fred. Ricky just seemed kind of emotionally abusive. I'm reading too much into this now.
Wow,
But he was always crushing Lucy's dreams. Can you just let her be in the show? Anyway, but I feel like it was really the story of Lucy and Ethel and their friendship. And one bit of trivia, Vivian Vance, who played Ethel Mertz, was actually younger than Lucille Ball.
Oh, they made her seem so much older.
I know.
That's so. And P.S. Vivian Vance. What a name.
It's almost as kind of sultry and sexy as Ethel Mertz. I love Ethel Mertz. I think I love Ethel as much as I love Lucy, just the two of them together. So
yeah.
Lucy and Ethel. My number three pick. I'm smiling just thinking about them.
Oh my God. I know. I'm like, can we just stop and go watch an episode right now? I love, love, love that pick.
All right, Amita, number two, your second choice favorite female friendship in pop culture.
Number two, people will not be surprised if you know me and you've listened to the show. I am a huge Shondaland fan and have been since forever. So it was, and she is a genius at writing female characters. And so I had to put Meredith and Christina from Grey's Anatomy. Because you're my person.
They're each other's person. Oh, good choice. Loving these choices.
It's great. Like, you're my person. Like, people say that now in vernacular. Like, that's what you just say to somebody. And that's something that Shonda created. So, like, that's because, and she created that and probably wrote that line, but she created that sense and that feeling between these two characters. They had gone through everything imaginable and were there for each other through each piece. And even when Christina didn't want to like let up and like open up to Meredith for certain aspects of what she was going through, Meredith had like this sixth Christina sense. And she's like, no, we're not doing this. I'm your person. You're my person. This is happening. You need to deal with it. And yeah, I'm here to help you deal with it.
Yeah, they'd call each other out on their BS.
Yeah.
And I was so invested in that friendship that there was maybe one season where a good chunk of the season they were not friends. And that was really hard. You know that characters are being written well when they break up. It hurts and it's stressful.
Yes, I've blocked that season out of my mind.
I mean,
mind.
It was almost an entire season where they weren't friends. And it
Why
just,
weren't they friends?
It was such an ugly, ugly feeling. It was tough. I think it may have happened twice. But remember, there was one season towards the end of Christina Yang's run on the show where Christina Yang basically says that Meredith has lost her ambition and drive. You're having babies.
Oh,
you're doing
this
research, which is just kind of swirling around but not going anywhere. And basically she said, you're not a serious surgeon. You're not a shark anymore.
Yes.
And that really drove a rift through them, through that friendship.
But in Christina's way, she was challenging her as a woman.
As friends need to do.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I love that. I love that they showed that in that way. But it was hard.
It was hard. And I think my investment in that friendship is illustrated by the fact that I did make this decision to stop watching Grey's at the end of the season where Christina Yang leaves. I feel like, in some ways, I just felt like, okay, that the story is done. You know, kind of like Lucy and Ethel, like the show is really about them. I think for me, like in many ways, Grey's Anatomy, or at least let's say like the first era of Grey's Anatomy, was about not McDreamy and Meredith, but really that show was centered around the friendship of Christina and Meredith. I know the show's still on and it's still great. Let's just call it the second era of Grey's. But for me, that first era of Grey's is about Christina and Meredith.
Mm-hmm. Oh, 100%. I know that's a great way of kind of categorizing this series that still is a huge hit and is going on for who knows how much longer. But I still watch it, just so you guys know. Anybody likes Grey's, we can talk about it.
Call her.
Call me. All right. So what do you have as number two on your top favorite female friendship in pop culture?
Well, I definitely wanted to choose female friendship of women of color. That was important for me for this list. And when I made that decision, the answer came quite easily. In a 90s kind of world, I'm glad I've got my friends.
Yes. We are living single.
I'm talking about Khadija, Sinclair, Maxine, and Regine. The women of Living Single. I loved this show so much in the 90s.
Good one.
I mean, just, it was, you know, everyone talks about how empowering and wonderful seeing the Huxtables on TV was in the 80s. So true. There was something equally powerful and empowering about, like, for me, being around the same age as those characters and seeing Black people working, being successful, striving for their goals, dealing with a lot of bougie concerns, which we should all be entitled to have bougie concerns. And those four characters were just so funny and likable, and they're the best. The women of Living Single, the friendship that those four had was pretty special.
You're so good. Sinclair, though. Sinclair.
I love Sinclair. She was my favorite. If I'm going to play favorites, I love Sinclair.
Oh, who didn't love Sinclair? Come on.
Woo, woo, woo. Woo, woo, woo.
And I mean, we've discussed doing this eventually, but that was a really great theme song.
Oh, yeah. We have to count down our favorite theme songs. That's up there. That's top 10 for sure. For sure.
Yeah.
And it's great. I mean, it's four of them, and I like the fact that they had this group friendship. But like in real life, there were different friendships between the two, you know, Max and Regine had a volatile friendship.
Mm-hmm.
Khadija and Sinclair were cousins and had that we've known each other for our entire lives friendship. Max and, you know, it's like all four, you know, all the permutations, the writers created really unique relationships between all of them.
Definitely. Definitely. I love that choice. That's a great show. I need to go watch that again.
Yeah, I hope it holds up. I bet it would. I think just for nostalgia, it would. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. For the wardrobe alone.
Oh, the 90s. Oh, Afrocentric 90s. I miss you. I miss you. Where's my cowrie shell necklace? I'm going to find it. Okay, Amita, the time has come. Your number one choice.
So when you think of a female friendship that kind of sticks with you, and you, whenever you revisit it, it's still just as emotional and strong as ever. This always, it's like baseline, this. It would be Cece Bloom and Hillary Whitney from Beaches.
Classic.
Yes. I happened to revisit this movie recently. It was actually for a project that I worked on. So I got to watch the original, and it's just such an incredible story of friendship. It really is. And throughout, it plots from when they were teenagers, children, you know, actually, I think younger than teenagers, you know, they were children. And then they stayed in touch, and then they came into each other's lives, and they were so different. They were not what you would typically think as people who would be friends with each other. Cece was so outrageous and a performer and so extroverted. And Hillary was so reserved and conservative and proper. And yet somehow their friendship literally stood the test of time. And then, I mean, the end of this film, the act of true friendship, you know, being there in your unfortunate weakest hour and then agreeing, and this is not a spoiler alert, y'all should have seen Beaches by now, okay?
Right,
and
exactly.
If you haven't, you should have seen the remake, but it's okay if you haven't, because I have thoughts on that. But either way, like to sit there and say, I will take care of your daughter because you are dying,
mm-hmm.
and because I am your best friend in the world and I know you better than anybody else, that's it. That's right there. That's your girl. That's your ride or die. That is your friend.
One thing we haven't talked about, but Beaches definitely makes me think about it, is the fact that here we are, a woman and a gay man, talking about favorite female friendships. And I think there is something in pop culture about how gay men become invested in strong female characters and female friendships. And it really strikes a chord with us, almost as much as it strikes a chord with women. But, you know, Beaches and Steel Magnolias and Fried Green Tomatoes, those are movies about female friendships, but that are also kind of these classic gay movies that gay men really love as well. And I don't know, I'm not sure if I have an answer to it, but I don't know. What do you think? There's something that gay men really do appreciate and, I don't know, in a way, idolize, or sometimes I think maybe we put on pedestal, put these strong women and these strong friendships on a pedestal.
Well, because I think they're strong women, but they have real emotion. You know, they are vulnerable as well, and they show their vulnerability most with female friends. I can speak specifically, you know, from my experience. I am most vulnerable with my female friends mm-hmm. than, you know, my gay male friends sometimes, and with, you know, my male friends as well. Like it happens to be that you can be your truest self, I feel, with a woman, because there is an inherent understanding and inherent empathy that a woman can give to a woman that not all men can do.
I think that's a great point. I guess I think, you know, even as gay men, we're still raised as boys and men in the society where you're taught not to be super vulnerable and super emotional. And I think it takes us a while. You try to learn to be. So yeah, I think when, you know, in real life, but also in TV and film, when I see, you're so right. When I see women being open and totally vulnerable and supportive in that way, yeah, like it's aspirational.
It is. It is. You know, like you were saying, Steel Magnolias. I should have put that on my list. I love that film too. That we should have made it a top 10 because there's, I mean, that's a great example. You know, like I think I mentioned Thelma and Louise earlier, Waiting to Exhale. What an incredible film dedicated to female friendship. You know, like there is so many, there are so many more examples that we couldn't encapsulate into this countdown right now, but it's the fact that there are so many means that it is something to be discussed. It's something that people want to see. It's something that's, frankly, when you talk about Hollywood, it's marketable because there, the female, you know, audience, we come out, we do this, we want to come out and we want to support this because we are supportive, because we want to see our stories being told. And I think they're always going to continue to be told because of the connection that we can always make with that story.
Yeah, you show up.
Yep.
All right, so let me try to segue into my number one choice.
I think you probably do know.
And listen, everyone, including Amita, This is, I'm trying not to be a cliche. I'm trying not to be redundant or repetitive. I want to be surprising. But all that said, I have very good reasons to share with you my number one choice, favorite female friendship in pop culture. For me, beyond a shadow of a doubt, from the town of Sunnydale.
Yep.
Willow Rosenberg and Buffy Summers.
I knew it.
You don't know me.
Listen, here's the thing. I know you, first of all. We have to play that game again because I clearly know you. Two, I don't think it's predictable of you to say that. Like, you're a huge fan of the series, so I would expect this of you.
Oh, thank you.
And I don't know the series. I haven't watched it. So I love that you chose this because now, Sean David Johnson, please enlighten me as to why this is your number one choice.
So many reasons. I'll give you some bullet points. I think the show was on for 7 seasons, and every season that friendship developed and grew just as the two characters grew. You know, I think you first see them, they're juniors in high school, and then by season 7, they've like gone, you know, they're graduated through college, and they fought many demons and vampires and witches throughout their time together. But the friendship grew and was quite often tested. So I love the fact that, like so many of the other friendships we've talked about, there were times where they turned on each other. There were times where Buffy Summers, who is the only Slayer, you know, the weight of that kind of caused her to lash out at her friends, and she pushed people away. And there were pockets of time where she and Willow were not close. There was a season where Willow actually became really evil and they actually had to battle each other. And of course it's all metaphor for what happens in real friendships, but then there were actually kind of real life things as well. There's a devastating episode, maybe one of the best episodes and best run storyline arcs, where Buffy's mother dies. And it doesn't get more real than that. It's played, she's not killed by a demon. It's actually a medical thing that happens. And Willow is there for her in a very powerful way. Willow comes out, and Willow's in college, and she comes out as a lesbian. And it's played so well. You know, and it's interesting, Buffy isn't the first person to find out. So there's that whole issue of like coming out and who do you tell first and how do your friends react? And that's explored in their friendship. So for me, it is the fact that lots of kind of supernatural metaphors that touch upon different aspects of friendship, but then also the real things that those two go through. And they're very different. But one thing that's nice is they're friends in high school and they maintain that friendship as they grow leaps and bounds. And that doesn't always happen, right? I've lost a lot of friendships from high school. I've just drifted apart from friends I've had in college and friends I've had in different workplaces. So again, I think when you talk about aspiration, there's something aspirational to me about how Buffy and Willow were able to maintain a friendship despite how they both drastically changed, despite the fact that they were always trying to keep those demons from climbing up out of the Hellmouth. They kept it together. So they really are my friendship goal.
I love it. Sean, can we not drift from each other, please?
Never.
Because I was a friend from your work, and I don't want to be one of those people.
No, okay? That'll never happen.
Okay.
Yes. Amita, I really loved that conversation. It really wasn't, and I'm not sure if this happens with other podcasters, but it wasn't until we actually started talking about it that it really hit me how important female friendships in pop culture has been, how much I care about them, and how much it truly, sincerely inspires me in a real way. I loved that segment.
Yeah, same here. It's just, like I said, it gives me all the feels. So I hope you guys enjoyed our top female friendships in pop culture. I think we need to eventually get to male friendships or men, some other type of relationships. I don't know. Maybe,
I don't know.
Now I'm getting into relationships.
Men don't know how to be friends, so we can't do that. But no, I'm sorry.
There all are. Right. We'll come up with another list soon, guys, and share it with you guys. And until then, we will have the big sell after this short message.
I'm Allegra Ringo.
And I'm Renee Colbert, and we host a podcast called Can I Pet Your Dog?
Renee, can I tell you about a dog I met this week?
I wish that you would. In turn, though, can I tell you about a dog hero?
May I tell you about a dog breed in a segment I like to call Mutt Minute?
Yeah, I would love that. Could we maybe talk about some dog tech?
Could we have some cool guests on, like Lin-Manuel Miranda, Nicole Byer, and Ann Wheaton?
I mean, yeah, absolutely.
I'm in.
You're on board? What do you say we do all of this and put it into a podcast?
Yeah, okay.
You think? All right. Should we call it, like, I don't know, Can I Pet Your Dog?
Sure.
All right. What do you say we put it on every Tuesday on Maximum Fun?
Or on iTunes. Sounds good to me.
Meeting's over.
Welcome back to Inside Pop. I'm Amita Patel.
And I'm Sean David Johnson. And now it is time for The Big Sell. The Big Sell is our weekly segment in which Amita and I take turns recommending something that we love from the world of pop culture to the other in hopes that they will also love it. Last week, I piled on. Last week, my original intention was to Big Sell Amita the new John Legend single, Woodstock. It's a cover of Joni Mitchell's Woodstock. And then, Amita, I asked you to also listen to Joni Mitchell's Woodstock, because, hey, why not?
And then you gave me homework to find out why he did the cover. And I was like, what is this assignment? I'm not in school anymore. But I did the homework.
School of
I know culture. The origin, and I'm ready. I'm ready.
Okay. I'm dying to know, because I actually tried to do the research as well, and I couldn't figure out why this song exists on Spotify. So please
enlighten
us. Oh,
see, aren't you glad? Aren't you glad your co-host knows how to Google extremely well?
Every day. I'm thankful every day.
First of all, what a beautiful song. I think I may have heard it at some point somewhere in life, but it was very brief, and so it was really nice to hear this gorgeous song. I love John Legend's voice. I've loved it since the moment I heard it years ago, and he has such depth and like kind of just like it's this bold, soulful voice that I love, but then when he goes high, it's so melodic and so sweet. So I really loved him doing this cover, and then of course listening to Joni Mitchell's, I was like, oh, this is a classic, and she is incredible at everything. So I loved listening to both of them, and I was also curious. I was like, why did he cover this song? So Ken Burns, the award-winning documentarian, did a documentary recently for PBS called Echoes of Vietnam. And so he got some artists from today to re-record some songs, I believe, from that period during Vietnam. So he had the Lumineers do a cover. He had this, I haven't listened to it yet, but I want to, a cover of this song, Ohio, which features Leon Bridges, Gary Clark Jr., and Jon Batiste.
What?
And the Ohio is an originally, it's I know, right? It's a Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young song from back in the day. And then this other song called, which you all know, I'm like, this song called California Dreamin' from the Mamas and the Papas.
Vaguely.
By this band called Joseph, who I've never heard, but it's three women called Joseph. And then Woodstock. Joni Mitchell covered by John Legend.
Amita, may I sincerely thank you? Because I want to listen to all of the, or at least most of those songs. So thank you.
You're welcome.
That's so cool. What a great idea for an album, and what a great lineup of people.
Yeah, he basically would, and they partnered with Spotify. All of the originals and the covers are, I think, you know, together on Spotify. And basically, they reimagined the iconic songs of the Vietnam War era. And it's just, I don't know, it's such a smart idea to kind of bring some new energy to a documentary that is about the Vietnam War.
Well, I was really curious when I started listening to, when I think I mentioned last week that it took me about 30 seconds to realize that this was John Legend doing a Joni Mitchell song. And the, because I love Joni Mitchell, as we know, and I love the lyrics are so damn beautiful in this song. And a little background, Joni Mitchell wrote the song about the Woodstock Festival, but she actually didn't attend Woodstock. Her manager thought it would be better for her to appear on the Dick Cavett Show. So Joni Mitchell was invited to Woodstock. She did not go there. So she basically wrote the song sitting in a New York City hotel room watching Woodstock and news reports of Woodstock play out. So she kind of wrote this beautiful love song to this festival without actually having been there. But people say that she just captured, and maybe it was that her objectivity or her distance from it, she kind of captured it better than a lot of people who were there.
Yeah. Oh, that's so, I never knew that. I just would have assumed she was at Woodstock. Wow. That's incredible. That's good. And it gives this song a whole different feeling now that I know that.
Yeah. Interesting.
Definitely.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then just bonus, if you guys want to listen to all of the songs and all the covers, it's called the Echoes of Vietnam playlist. And they actually have the songs, the covers, the originals, and then videos of the artists performing the songs and talking about how music shaped the era and defined that generation. So I think it sounds like an amazing playlist, and I'm going to definitely check it out. Big sell and a big sell, guys.
Oh, thank you. Me too. So what do you – thank you for that research, Nancy
You're
Drew.
Welcome.
And would you also then – be kind enough to give us your rating of John Legend's cover of Joni Mitchell's Woodstock.
This is a solid 3.5 stars, you know, especially knowing the background, knowing what it's part of, and then obviously his voice and, you know, getting those echoes of Joni it was great.
You guys, we haven't received a 3.5 from Amita in weeks now, so I'm very happy about this. I'm very happy that John Legend was able to elevate the Big Sell back up to 3.5 stars. And
we were caught in like a 3.25 for a while,
really,
guys.
Were.
Struggle was real, but it's okay.
It really well, Amita, can you keep it going? Are you able to Big Sell me something that will inspire me to go 3.5 or higher?
You're so competitive, first of all. That's not okay. Hey, can you follow John Legend and Joni Mitchell with a really strong Big Sell, Amita? I mean,
really
I feel like
gonna...
I need to lower expectations and be like, no,
okay.
I cannot. I won't even try. My Big Sell is a track that I think I got either, I think it was on my Discover Weekly a couple weeks ago, and I just keep coming back to it once in a while. I just really enjoyed the beat and the feeling of the song, and it's a newer artist named Banks, and she did a song called Underdog, and I love the lyrics. Just being the underdog is always kind of gives you some kind of juju, just feeling a song like this. But I don't know, she's got this new pop, you know, electronic kind of sound, but I really like it, and I don't know what it is about the song, but I really like it, so I thought I could Big Sell to you.
Sounds like at least 3.75 stars.
No,
just from that description. So I can't wait to jump up on that song.
I don't know why I like it, but I like it. 3.75 stars.
Well, Amita, as always, thank you for this Big Sell. And I do actually look forward to checking it out.
Yeah. Great. I hope you enjoy it. No pressure on the rating. Okay. All right, guys, that's it for this week. Please stay in touch with us on Twitter and Instagram, as always, at Pop Insiders. And head over to our Facebook page at Inside Pop. And then also go to InsidePopPodcast.com. Find out more about us, subscribe to this podcast, and also you can find us on MaximumFun.org. You can find us so many ways, so there's no reason that you can't find us.
Next week, make sure you find us because we have another great episode ahead for you. We are going to share a conversation we had about life-defining songs, the songs that played a pivotal role in our lives, past, near past, and present. So it's a really special conversation to us, and we're looking forward to sharing it with you guys again next week.
Have a great week, y'all.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.